we all breathe, right? I mean, it's probably the most automatic thing our bodies do.
Absolutely. Taken for granted, pretty much.
Yeah, thousands of times a day. You don't even think about it. But what if that simple act is actually this wildly complex, you know, ingenious symphony happening inside you, orchestrated by an organ system that does way more than just, well, move air?
Right.
So today we're taking a deep dive into the respiratory system. It's all based on this really insightful lecture we looked at by Dr. Ty C.M. Hoffman.
That's right. And our mission here really is to pull out the key insights, the most important bits, and maybe some surprising facts from what Dr. Hoffman shared.
Like a shortcut.
Yeah, exactly. A shortcut to being well-informed about how we really breathe.
Yeah.
Going way beyond just, you know, inhale, exhale.
Okay. So let's start with a word Dr. Hoffman really helped clarify. Respiration, because I think for a lot of people, that immediately makes you think cellular respiration, right? The energy stuff in the cell.
Right, the ATP production.
But for this system, that's not quite it, is it?
No, exactly. Dr. Hoffman was very clear. When we're talking the respiratory system, respiration is mainly about that exchange, oxygen and carbon dioxide.
Okay.
He also used terms like ventilation or just breathing. But the key thing, that gas swap happening at the lungs, that's often specifically called external respiration.
Gotcha. But what really struck me was Dr. Hoffman pointing out it does so much more than just gas exchange.
I mean, yeah.
I'm talking right now because of it. And it's involved in maintaining blood pressure, too.
Yeah, subtle changes in breathing can actually influence the tone of your blood vessels. It's like this constant minute-by-minute fine-tuning.
Wow. And then the obvious things like speaking, singing, even just, you know, blowing something off your arm.
Right. It's this foundational regulator, really, impacting way more than just the gases.
Okay, so let's get into the actual structures. Dr. Hoffman described it as this amazing plumbing system.
A great analogy.
You think lungs, obviously, but the journey for the air starts way before that.
It absolutely does. Like Dr. Hoffman showed, air comes in through your nose, the nasal cavity, or your mouth, the oral cavity.
And the mouth is interesting. It's that overlap with digestion.
Exactly. We think food, but it's air too.
Yeah.
Both paths lead to the pharynx, the throat,
right,
which is another shared tube.
Then from the pharynx, air keeps going down to the larynx, the top of the windpipe area.
Mm-hmm. The voice box sits there.
Yeah.
And then you hit the main pipe, the trachea, or windpipe.
Right. And Dr. Hoffman explained how that single trachea then splits, bifurcates?
Yeah, bifurcates into two primary bronchi, one heading into each lung.
Okay, one pipe splits into two main branches.
And that's just the start of the branching. Mm-hmm. Those primary bronchi divide again into secondary bronchi. Then those split into tertiary bronchi.
Wow.
And it keeps going. Smaller and smaller tubes called bronchioles, constantly subdividing. It really is like a tree, the respiratory tree, with the trachea as the trunk.
It's incredible. And the lungs themselves, they're not just loose in there, are they? Dr. Hoffman mentioned the pleura.
Yes. Each lung is wrapped in its own double-layered sac, the pleura. And there's fluid between the layers.
Why the fluid?
Lubrication. Dr. Hoffman explained it's vital. Lungs move a lot, inflating and deflating. That fluid stops friction, stops them rubbing raw against the chest wall. Imagine without it.
Ouch. Okay, speaking of clever design, Dr. Hoffman went into detail about the nasal cavity. Seems simple, just an entrance, but it's crucial.
Oh, incredibly so. It's lined with this moist tissue, and it has these folds sticking out the nasal conchae. Superior, middle, and inferior ones.
Folds? Why folds?
Well, here's the genius part. These conchae make the incoming air turbulent, swirls it around.
Okay, okay.
And that turbulence forces the air to make maximum contact with that moist lining. So it warms the air up and humidifies it.
Ah, like air conditioning.
Exactly. It preps the air before it hits the delicate lungs, stops them drying out. And Dr. Hoffman added that when you exhale, moisture condenses back onto the lining so you can conserve water too. It's really clever.
Nature's air conditioner. I like that. Now, Dr. Hoffman also drew a really clear contrast between the trachea and the esophagus. They run close together, but structurally very different. Why the dryer hose structure for the trachea?
Right. That dryer hose analogy.
Mm-hmm.
The key is airflow. The trachea needs to stay open all the time.
Okay.
So it has these C-shaped rings of cartilage. They're rigid. They prop it open, keep that lumen, the passageway, clear.
But not full rings.
No, C-shaped. The back is soft tissue facing the esophagus. The esophagus, though, it only needs to open when you swallow food. Otherwise, it's pretty much collapsed. Structure fits function perfectly.
Makes sense. And the inside lining of the trachea is special, too. Dr. Hoffman highlighted that.
Oh, absolutely. It's lined with cells pumping out sticky mucus.
Like flypaper.
Exactly like flypaper. It traps dust, bacteria, little bits of whatever you inhaled.
Okay, so it traps the junk. How does it get rid of it?
That's the other part. Tiny hairs called cilia. They're constantly beating, sweeping that mucus with all the trapped gunk upwards.
Upwards. Towards your mouth.
Towards your mouth and pharynx, yeah. It's called the mucociliary escalator. Mm-hmm. You then swallow it, and your stomach acid just destroys whatever was caught.
Wow. A built-in cleaning crew.
Tireless. Keeps all that stuff out of your lungs.
Okay, so we've got the plumbing and the cleaning. Now, how does the air actually move? What powers breathing? Dr. Hoffman focused on the diaphragm and the rib cage.
Right, the mechanics. So for active inhalation breathing in, your diaphragm, that big dome muscle at the base of your chest, contracts.
And it flattens out.
It flattens and moves down. At the same time, muscles between your ribs, the external intercostals, contract.
Okay.
And they lift your ribs up and out. Dr. Hoffman used that great bucket handle analogy.
Right. Lifting a bucket handle moves it up, but also outwards.
Precisely. So your whole rib cage expands front to back, side to side, top to bottom, because the diaphragm went down. The volume increases.
And here's where that pleura comes back in, right? The fluid. This part was really interesting.
Yes. This is key. Dr. Hoffman explained that the pleural fluid, that thin layer between the lung pleura and the chest wall pleura, is incompressible. It basically glues the lungs to the inside of the rib cage.
Like wet glass slides sticking together?
Kind of, yeah. So as the rib cage expands, it pulls the lungs outward with it. The lungs themselves are forced to expand.
Okay, so the chest expands, pulling the lungs open. Then what?
Physics takes over. Right. As the lung volume gets bigger, the pressure inside the lungs drops.
Lower than the air pressure outside.
Exactly. Lower than atmospheric pressure.
Yeah.
And air naturally flows from high pressure to low pressure. So air gets pushed into your lungs from the outside. You don't really suck it in.
Ah, okay. It's driven by the pressure difference. So that's inhaling. What about breathing out? Exhaling?
Well, normal quiet exhalation is mostly passive. Dr. Hoffman made that clear.
Passive, meaning no muscle effort.
Pretty much. The diaphragm relaxes, goes back to its dome shape. The external intercostals relax, the ribs move down and in, and the lungs themselves are elastic, like rubber bands.
So they just spring back.
They naturally recoil, decreasing their volume. This increases the pressure inside above atmospheric, and air flows out. Simple, elastic recoil.
But what about forcing air out, like blowing out candles? Dr. Hoffman had a funny comment about rethinking that tradition.
He did. Forced exhalation is active. You use different muscles. The internal intercostals pull the ribs down harder and faster, and your abdominal muscles contract forcefully.
Squeezing your abs helps you breathe out harder.
Yeah, it pushes your organs up against the diaphragm, forcing it upward, rapidly shrinking the chest volume, and pushing air out with force.
Okay, got it. Now, you mentioned the respiratory tree earlier. Dr. Hoffman distinguished between two functional zones in that tree. Not all of it does gas exchange.
That's a crucial distinction he made. You have the conducting zone and the respiratory zone.
Okay, what's the difference?
The conducting zone is the trachea down through the primary, secondary, tertiary bronchi, and even the smallest terminal bronchioles. Mm. Its job is just to conduct air, move it in and out. No gas exchange happens there.
Just pipes.
Basically, yeah. Air pipes with cleaning and conditioning.
Right.
But then you get to the respiratory zone. This starts with respiratory bronchioles, which have a few air sacs building off them, and then leads to the alveoli.
The tiny air sacs.
The tiny air sacs. This is where the gas exchange actually happens. Oxygen in, CO2 out.
And the structure of these alveoli. This leads to that mind-blowing fact about surface area.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Hoffman gave that amazing comparison. All these millions of tiny alveoli create a massive surface area for gas exchange. You've spread them all out flat.
Like a tennis court.
Roughly the size of a tennis court.
Mm.
Inside your chest. It's just incredible efficiency, maximizing the area where oxygen can get into your blood.
It really puts our metabolic needs into perspective. We need that much surface area.
Definitely. And the cells making up the alveoli are super specialized, too. Dr. Hoffman described two main types.
Okay.
Type I alveolar cells are incredibly thin, like paper thin, perfect for letting gases diffuse across quickly. They make up most of the surface.
And type 2?
Type 2 alveolar cells are chunkier. Their job is to secrete surfactant.
Surfactant, like soap.
Kinda. It acts like a detergent. It reduces the surface tension of the thin fluid layer lining the alveoli. Without it, the surface tension would be so high the tiny alveoli would collapse, especially when you exhale. Surfactant makes it much easier to inflate them.
So super thin cells for exchange and other cells making stuff to keep them open. Any others?
Yeah, there are also macrophages, like little vacuum cleaners crawling around inside the alveoli, gobbling up any dust or debris that made it that far down.
Always cleaning. Okay, so Dr. Hoffman also walked us through the actual journey of one oxygen molecule, from the air in the alveolus to getting into the blood. It sounds simple, but it's quite a few steps.
It is. It's like a little obstacle course. First, the oxygen has to cross what Dr. Hoffman called the respiratory membrane.
The barrier between air and blood.
Exactly. And it has three parts. First, the wall of the alveolar cell itself, that super thin type I cell. Then it crosses a fused basement membrane. Basically, the sheer glue layer between the alveolar cell and the capillary wall.
Right.
And finally, it has to cross the wall of the capillary, the endothelial cell. So three layers, but incredibly thin overall.
So it crosses that membrane, gets into the bloodstream, but it's not done yet.
Nope. Now it's dissolved in the blood plasma. But most oxygen isn't carried dissolved. It has to diffuse into a red blood cell.
Find a red blood cell.
And then inside the red blood cell, it has to bind to a hemoglobin molecule.
The oxygen taxi.
The oxygen taxi, exactly. Dr. Hoffman emphasized each hemoglobin can grab up to four oxygen molecules. It's this multi-step journey happening incredibly fast, millions of times over.
Wow. Okay, let's shift gears a bit. Dr. Hoffman talked about lung volumes and capacities, specific terms for measuring breath. It's not just one size fits all breathing.
No, definitely not. He made a clear distinction. Volumes are like single measurements. Capacities are combinations of volumes.
Okay, give me an example of a volume.
Tidal volume is the classic one. That's just the amount of air you move in and out with a normal quiet breath,
yeah.
Like right now.
Any capacity.
Vital capacity is a big one. That's the total amount of air you can possibly move. So breathe in as deep as you can, then force out as much air as you possibly can. That whole volume you moved is your vital capacity. It's a combination of a few different volumes.
Right. And there's one volume Dr. Hoffman mentioned you can never breathe out.
Yes. The residual volume.
Yeah.
No matter how hard you exhale, there's always some air left in your lungs.
Why?
Keeps the alveoli from collapsing completely, keeps some gas exchange going even between breaths. You can't physically empty your lungs.
Interesting. And he also mentioned other ways we move air that aren't really breathing for gas exchange.
Yeah, those non-respiratory gas movements. Mm-hmm. Things like coughing, sneezing, obvious ones. But also laughing, yawning, hiccups. And importantly, speaking and singing, like we said before, all involve controlling airflow for different purposes.
Okay, this next part really dove into the chemistry. Dr. Hoffman showed it's not just about moving O2 and CO2. There's crucial chemistry happening that affects blood acidity and how oxygen is even carried.
This is where it gets really elegant, I think.
Yeah.
So think about the lungs, first external respiration. As CO2 leaves your blood and goes into the alveoli,
okay,
a chemical reaction in your blood shifts. It actually uses up hydrogen ions. Less H+ means the blood plasma becomes less acidic, more alkaline, right there in the lung capillaries.
All right, less acidic in the lungs. So what?
Here's the kicker. That slightly less acidic environment makes hemoglobin better at grabbing onto oxygen. Its affinity for oxygen increases.
Perfect timing, just when oxygen is plentiful in the lung.
Exactly. Maximizes oxygen loading onto the hemoglobin taxis before they leave the lungs.
Okay, so what happens at the other end? In the body tissues, where cells are making CO2, internal respiration.
It's the complete opposite and just as perfect. CO2 leaves the cells, enters the blood. This drives that chemical reaction the other way, producing more hydrogen ions.
So the blood becomes more acidic near active tissues.
Precisely. And guess what that increased acidity does to hemoglobin?
Let me guess. Makes it release oxygen.
Bingo. The higher acidity makes hemoglobin loosen its grip on oxygen, encouraging it to release the oxygen right where the cells need it most. The tissues, doing work and producing CO2.
That is incredibly clever. The waste product, CO2, directly influences oxygen delivery.
It's a beautifully self-regulating system.
And this links directly to that myth Dr. Hoffman busted about holding your breath, right? You don't stop because you run out of O2.
That's the common assumption, but no. He clarified the real reason you're forced to take that gasp of air.
Which is?
It's the buildup of carbon dioxide. Mm. As you hold your breath, CO2 levels climb in your blood. This makes your blood more acidic because of those hydrogen ions we just talked about.
Okay.
And your brainstem, the part of your brain controlling basic life functions, is extremely sensitive to that change in acidity. Not so much the lack of oxygen initially. It's the rising acidity, the CO2 buildup, that triggers that overwhelming, involuntary urge to breathe.
So CO2 is the main driver telling you, breathe now.
Under normal circumstances, yes. It's the critical signal.
Fascinating. And Dr. Hoffman wrapped up by talking about how this is all controlled mostly without us even realizing it.
Yeah, the unconscious control. There's a breathing center located in the brainstem.
The medulla and pons area.
Exactly. It automatically monitors that blood acidity, primarily driven by CO2 levels via those hydrogen ions. When acidity rises, this center sends signals out.
Signals to which muscles?
To the diaphragm and the external intercostal muscles, telling them to contract, initiating inspiration. Then it cycles, allowing relaxation for expiration. It sets up that basic rhythm.
All happening automatically, which explains that weird paradox Dr. Hoffman mentioned.
Oh, yeah, when you consciously think about your breathing.
Yeah, it suddenly feels awkward and unnatural, like you mess up the rhythm.
Happens every time. Because you're overriding that smooth, automatic control from the brainstem.
And there are other sensors involved too, right? Not just the brainstem.
Yes. He briefly mentioned sensors in places like the aorta and carotid arteries that can also detect changes in blood gases and pressure, sending feedback to the brainstem to help fine-tune the breathing pattern. It's all interconnected.
Wow. Okay, what an incredible journey through the respiratory system. We've gone from the basic plumbing.
The pipes and branches.
To the nose's air conditioning. The clever design of the trachea, keeping it open. The mechanics of the diaphragm and ribs.
Powered by pressure changes.
That amazing tennis court surface area in the alveoli. And then that hidden, crucial chemistry linking CO2, acidity, and oxygen delivery.
It really gives you a new appreciation for something so seemingly simple.
Absolutely. Dr. Hoffman's insights really highlight this unseen symphony, you know? Cells, fluids, muscles, chemistry, all working together perfectly every single second.
Makes you pause and just notice your next breath, doesn't it? Appreciate the complexity behind it.
It really does. So thinking about that final point, that CO2 sensitivity, what does this all mean? If CO2 buildup, a waste product, is the primary trigger for breathing, not lack of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the real takeaway is that these so-called waste products are actually vital signals, just as important for regulating us as the nutrients we bring in.
That's a really profound thought.
Mm. How might understanding that CO2 sensitivity, that it's not just waste, maybe change how you approach something like breath work or even just how you value that exhale? It's not just getting rid of stuff. It's part of the signal loop.
It definitely raises a bigger question, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How many other things our body produces that we think of as waste are actually crucial signals for maintaining balance, for homeostasis?
Exactly. Something to ponder. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive today.
My pleasure.
Keep exploring, keep learning, and most importantly, keep breathing.